Will the clerk please call the next case?
124-2584 WC, Source One Staffing, appellant by Daniel Lovato versus the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission et al. Hero Servin Cabrera, appellee by John Costanza.
Mr. Lovato, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and it's great to see you here for the second time this morning. And for the first time, truly. So this case is quite different than the one we just discussed, and certainly I'm sure you're aware of that. This case involves a review of the decision that we believe and the evidence shows was completely against the manifest weight of the evidence in this issue. What happened in this case, and we don't deny that an incident happened. That's never been an issue, that an incident did happen. The question is, what was the actual incident, and did that incident cause Mr. Cabrera's current symptoms? Let me start with what the accident actually was. And what the accident actually was what he testified to at trial and what could be found in records at the hospital and shortly thereafter. The employee in this matter testified to, and again, can be found in the ER records the day of the accident, that he was, while moving and stacking some pallets, another forklift driver came by, bumped into the pallets, which caused him to move forward. He hit his chest against another stack of pallets. And then it's a little unclear, but as the forklift driver seemed to be trying to get out of that position where he just bumped and as the medical records put it, nudged forward the employee, it seemed to have bumped him again. And at this time, the employee then fell to the ground. We don't deny that that happened, Your Honors.
Do
At no point.
we know what height he fell from?
He fell from a standing position, so he didn't fall off anything. He fell from his feet. The stack of
But he
pallets that
wasn't on
he.
top of, he was not on top of the pallets.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe he was. I don't believe he testified he was.
Okay.
And we do know that the stack of pallets that he bumped into going forward is about chest height. Thereafter, that same day, he goes to the emergency room. It describes the fall as that way. He describes it as he was nudged forward and then fell to the ground. He does not talk about landing on his shoulder. He talks about landing on his face and his back. He's examined. In fact, he has a completely normal examination of his shoulders and his neck that day. He's diagnosed with a chest contusion and a back contusion. The following day, he goes to get further treatment. At no point does he mention that his neck is bothering him, nor his shoulders at this point. Again, at this point, it's still just a chest contusion and a back contusion. It's not, and then a week after the injury, he goes to Tyler Medical. He specifically denies neck pain once more. At no point from a week there was he feeling any neck pain. At this point, it's still just a chest issue and a back issue. And in fact, at Tyler Medical, and you can look in the records yourself, the doctor says that for as far as his pain, his other pain that's not regarding his chest or the contusion on his back, he should go see a doctor for these non-work related injuries. A doctor said that. It's not until about 2 weeks after the injury when the petitioner goes to see Dr. Ross. Dr. Ross, the employee now reports that he is having some neck pain. However, the employee also reports now to Dr. Ross that he was struck by a forklift that was traveling 20 miles per hour. Completely different from anything he had reported at this point. Completely different to what he reported to the medical, to the ER on the day of, and completely different to what he testified during the trial. And I don't know about you, but I'm not aware of any forklifts in a setting that would travel 20 miles per hour. So, anyways, that is what Dr. Ross's understanding of the injury is, that he was struck at 20 miles per hour by a forklift. He also describes a different injury to Dr. Chudnik, and Dr. Chudnik and Dr. Ross are his two treating physicians. To Dr. Chudnik, he discusses how he was crushed in between a stationary object and a loaded forklift. Again, completely different. Do we admit that he was knocked into a stationary object? Absolutely. He was, and as he's described himself, he was nudged into a stationary object. At no point, other than to what he described to Dr. Chudnik, does he describe being, quote, stuck in between the objects. And again, that's 3 months after the injury. So now, 2 months after the injury is what he described that to Dr. Ross. 3 months after the injury is when he described it to Dr. Chudnik. Those are the first time that all of a sudden these injuries, rather than just being a simple nudge and fall, are these extremely violent and traumatic injuries. Subsequently, it was also right around that time when his benefits were denied by the IME doctor, Dr. Stanley. So regarding, and I understand this is really more an issue of causation than it is accident. However, the reason we did put accident in dispute here is because, excuse me, the reason we put accident in dispute here is because the benefits that are awarded, and you can see it in the commission's decision, or the arbitrator's decision, which is also upheld by the commission and then thereafter the circuit court, they rely on the opinions of Dr. Ross. And Dr. Ross, as we just described, is relying on an injury that didn't happen. He was not struck by a 20 mile per hour forklift. That simply never happened. He was nudged by one, sure, and had a slight chest contusion and a slight back contusion, absolutely. But he was never struck at such a velocity that the doctor that the commission most relies on understands he was struck by. That simply did not happen. And of course, that brings us to the question of causation. As I've discussed, at no point the employee did testify this. He didn't feel immediate neck pain. He didn't feel immediate shoulder pain. He simply had chest and some back contusions when he first hit it. It wasn't until a few days later, actually over a week later, when he discusses that he has shoulder pain. And it's not even until 2 months later when he discusses that he has neck pain. That's why I believe that this causation opinion should have been weighed more heavily with Dr. Stanley rather than Dr. Ross, because Dr. Ross and as well Dr. Chudnik are relying on a version of a story that's clearly much more traumatic and violent than what actually occurred. And when I say what actually occurred, I'm basing it off of one, his sworn testimony during the trial. And two, if you want to discuss, and I believe the circuit court or commission raised the idea of contemporaneous and when timing and things are said, the most, the two, the way that injury is described most contemporaneous to when it occurred are the ER notes and shortly thereafter when he discusses being nudged, no neck pain, no shoulder pain. I want to discuss a little more about Dr. Ross's opinion and why it's wrongly decided outside of the fact that he's basing it on an injury that's significantly more violent than actually happened. Dr. Ross at first suspected that there might be radiculopathy in the petitioner's neck. Because of that, he sends him for an EMG. Comes back, there is the EMG was clean. There was no radiculopathy. He ends up recommending, however, that this should be a fusion surgery. We have testimony from Dr. Ross as well as Dr. Stanley that fusion surgeries are recommended to cure radiculopathy, which Dr. Ross has not only said there is none, he's confirmed it by his own EMG. There is no radiculopathy. Certainly, that the symptoms that the petitioner's feeling are not related to any sort of work injury at this point. There's no objective evidence other than the petitioner saying, I think my neck pain and I think my shoulder pain are related to this, which again, he's changed his story and increased the violence when he's starting to realize that these benefits may not be accepted by the insurance company. All of a sudden, his story becomes significantly more violent than what actually happened. And again, this is backed up by the EMG. And certainly the date of the IME that Dr. Stanley performed was January 30th of 2020, which was about 2 months after the 2.5 months after the injury happened. Dr. Stanley opined he was at MMI. That's when we believe all benefits should have been stopped. That's when he had reached MMI at that point. And there was should have been no further TTD, no further medical benefits, and certainly not the prospective medical care of a neck surgery that was requested, Your Honors.
Well, counsel, your argument's all fine and good, but in a manifest weight case, we've got a commission that found Dr. Ross more credible. How do we deal with that?
Again, well, you deal with it by looking at the manifest weight. And when you look at it, I believe the commission just patently, and not to accuse them, but they patently got the decision wrong. The manifest weight shows that Dr. Ross, while I'm sure he's a fine doctor and possibly even a great doctor, and I know he's well respected, he's basing his opinion on something that didn't happen. I don't know how you can credit a doctor who's basing his opinion on something that simply did not happen, find that person more credible. Not to mention, if counsel wants to, and he argued it, And the commission discusses it, count that our IME doctors, was paid by the respondent in this case. Well, which doctor stands to gain more? The one that's getting paid $1,000 for an IME opinion, or the one that's going to be making five figures from doing a cervical fusion? If that's a question of credibility, again, I believe that you should be the manifest weight, excuse me, shows that both Dr. Stanley understands what actually happened in the accident, whereas Dr. Ross was fed a lie. And as far as bias goes, I don't believe when you look at it objectively that you could say that Dr. Stanley is more biased than possibly Dr. Ross is in this case.
But it's also, sorry to cut in, but it's also problematic for you that in finding Ross credible, the commission found Stanley less or not as credible.
Right, Your Honor, and that's kind of the point I was trying to address here is I think Patton they just that the decision is wrong. I don't see how they could have found Dr. Ross to be the more credible one, and I'm not attacking Dr. Ross's character. I would rather what doc the knowledge that Dr. Ross was working with compared to the knowledge that Dr. Stanley was working with. The knowledge that Dr. Ross was working with, he's predicating his opinions essentially on a lie told to him about a significantly more vicious incident than it happened. And then Dr. Ross actually goes and says, okay, well, I'm going to investigate this myself a little bit, orders the EMG, and the EMG confirms that there is no radiculopathy. So I don't see how, given all that, the commission could have found that Dr. Ross was more credible than Dr. Stanley.
I mean, you make a good argument based upon what we have before us, but there's this issue of judging the credibility, and that's for the commission. You're asking us to buy your understanding of the facts and this made-up speed of the forklift. That's all sounds reasonable to me, but there was that credibility issue, and the commission heard from these two doctors and made those findings in a manifest weight case. I think that's still problematic for you, no?
It certainly is, Your Honor. And my response to that has it would be sort of what my response has been is that yeah, I understand that the commission found them more credible, but when you look at everything objectively and read the testimony and read the records, they simply got it wrong. The manifest weight, and you could say even something more than the manifest weight. I would say the heavy implication is that. The commission just, it felt possibly a little sympathy for this employee because of what he was going through. Instead of looking at the objective evidence that would show to you that in no world should a doctor who doesn't even understand what actually happened be found and confirms his own opinions later on with objective tests be found to be more credible than a doctor that has all the knowledge at his own disposal.
Thank you.
Your Honor, that really is kind of the meat and potatoes of my argument as the case is. If there's any more questions now, I'd be more than happy to address them.
Any question from the court? No?
Well,
Okay.
the only
Mr.
question I
Lotto,
have,
you'll have time and reply.
it looks like Honor
I have a
Barbaris.
question.
Oh, there was a question.
Yeah,
Excuse
the
me,
only question
Justice
I have,
Barbaros.
I know you were asked this, and I just want to reiterate. You stated that the claimant fell after being struck, nudged, however we want to describe it, by the forklift from a standing position on the floor. Are we certain that it wasn't that he was on at least on a single pallet, if not more?
Yeah, Your Honor, and I would have to reread his testimony. I believe he testified that he was standing maybe on one to two pallets. My understanding was that he was standing on the floor. I don't think whether the height he was at really changes the analysis in this case, because even had he been standing on one or to two pallets, it's a negligible height considering he was nudged forward off the pallet and then fell backwards from standing.
Sure, no, and I appreciate that answer. But the final question I'll have for you is whether or not the injuries sustained by the claimant were caused by the forklift, the actual striking by the forklift, or were any of them attributable to the fall as well?
I believe that it's kind of It's hard to answer your question because the understanding and how he testified is that it kind of happened so quick that you could say, the chest contusion that he suffered might have been originally caused by the forklift bumping into him, because that's when he testifies he goes forward and hits his chest. And then the contusion he sustained to his back, which again, no, never mentioned shoulder or neck pain until a few months after, that could be caused by the fall. However, I don't think at any point you can argue that what he's feeling in his neck or his shoulders is caused by either one.
Okay. Well, and I know that there's a contention about 20 mile per hour forklift being struck by. I drove a forklift in college for a little while, and I don't recall them going 20 miles per hour because if they could, I would have probably tried it.
Right.
But hitting any being hit by a forklift on any part of the forklift at even 10 miles per hour, but 20 miles per hour would be a fairly significant injury for sure, for certain. So,
Yeah, absolutely, Aaron. And I agree with you, except for the fact that his testimony is that he was nudged. It wasn't that, hey, I was rammed, I was, smacked by this thing. I was nudged forward. That's
right,
his testimony, and that was his report to the doctors as well at the ER.
so you bring that up, and I said that was my last question. I'll have one follow-up based on what you just said. The verbiage, the terminology that the claimant used, a Spanish speaking claimant, if I understand correctly, to have been nudged. Are there any nuances between the Spanish language and the English language, the translator, that could maybe give some clarity as to what his idea of a nudge was, or was it truly the word nudge used? I mean, when we start having translators and we start using, other languages, I think some of that can be confusing to
Sure.
both the claimant, who is the reporter, and the receiver of that information, be it the doctor, the court, whoever. Do we know when he went to the doctor? Was there a translator needed at the doctor's office? Did he have a translator? Did the doctor speak Spanish? Any of that thing?
Your Honor, I'm not going to represent to you that I know the answer to that question. I can represent to you that when he reported to Dr. Ross, which is when all of a sudden this forklift is going 20 miles per hour, he did have a translator there, and Dr. Ross actually testified that there was no language barrier or miscommunication barrier whatsoever. As far as the ER goes, we didn't depose those people. I'm not sure whether there was a translator there. However, what I can say on my very limited knowledge of the Spanish language is that in probably all languages for that matter, I believe there's you would be able to represent, even to someone that's maybe it's a nurse that just speaks Spanish, the difference between being nudged and being hit by 20 miles per hour. I don't think that's it's really a gray area. I think that's a pretty black and white description, whether you're speaking Spanish, English, French, Italian, whatever you may be speaking.
So the testimony, his report of being nudged, that was definitely from the ER, correct? Is where
Correct.
he used that terminology. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hey, very good. You'll have time in reply, Mr. Castaneda. You may respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Counsel Lovato. My name is John Castaneda. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Cyril Servan Cabrera. Your Honors, the crux of this case is really the medical causation issue as to whether or not Mr. Cabrera's injuries that he suffered to his bilateral shoulders and cervical spine might or could be causally related to his accident of October 14, 2019, by a preponderance of the evidence. And certainly, this gentleman suffered an accident. In fact, appellant's first sentence of their brief is they agree Mr. Cabrera was knocked down. So I want to address that portion of the case initially because I think that was something that the appellant decided to dispute at the trial once they found a one-sentence report in the ER that says that he gave a history of being nudged. And I would submit to this court that that history is in total opposite to the rest of the history, including his report of injury given at the trial. And normally, you're not going to hear or read a report of injury at trial unless it's helpful to the employer. In this case, the report of injury wasn't even admitted into evidence, but it was read into the record. And what Mr. Cabrera said in his report of injury was that he was putting together these pallets when a coworker was driving a pallet jack and accidentally hit the pallets. The pallets hit him on his feet and he landed on the pallets. And before he was able to get up, the driver went around again and hit them again and he landed on the floor. Now, I submit to this court that that is not a nudge. A nudge is not going to cause you to fall from a standing height and face plant on the pallet if you are nudged. It's not a gentle push. It's not a gentle tap. It is a pallet, electronic motorized pallet jack striking these pallets, causing this man to fall. Now, the records that were admitted into evidence also support this description. If you look at the nurse's counsel, notes.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. Maybe I misunderstand. So this is not a forklift.
This is not a forklift, Your Honor.
It's a pallet jack. It's a pallet jack, which is the operator is basically on the floor.
Yes, it's an electronic and it's motorized pallet jack.
Right. It's used to move pallets, or particularly pallets that have objects, weighty objects on them.
Correct.
Okay, I just was clear because we got forklift somehow in here.
Well, I think again, this is a language issue where my client is describing it as a forklift, and it's really a pallet jack, as he described that testimony. The nurse at the emergency room, the same place where the doctor wrote nudge and said that my client had mild pain, the nurse, the intake nurse, said the history that she wrote down was that my client was at work when he got pushed by a forklift driver, fell backwards on the wooden pallets, got up, lost his balance, and fell forward onto wooden pallets. It was complaining of torso pain and head pain and was a standing height before he fell. He also told the nurse his pain was 8 out of 10, and she wrote down back and chest pain from a fall. This is certainly different from what the doctor wrote later on in the same visit, that he was nudged and he had mild pain. Then you look at the physician's immediate care records, which were the same day of the accident, and there his history is he's here post-accident. He got injured yesterday by a forklift driver, hit him with some pallets 2 times. First time he fell straight forward, second time he fell on the right side. And then 2 days later, the employer sends him to Tyler Medical Services. So this is their clinic. They're sending him for treatment. And at Tyler Medical, he states in the history that he is evaluated for an injury to his head, his left shoulder, and his chest. 2 days ago, on October 14, 2019, he was struck by an electronic pallet jack at work. He fell striking the right side of his face, left shoulder, and chest area. The pain is on the right side of the face, left shoulder, and chest pain. Then 14 days later at the same clinic, he then is complaining of neck pain, and Dr. Pappas is noticing that the pain is radiating down his arm from the neck. This is the first symptom that we see relating to his neck, which can demonstrate cervical radiculopathy. So I submit to the court that really the reason accident was put in dispute was because that one physician in one note wrote that he was nudged, which is certainly not the case here. The commission properly found that the contemporaneous medical records indicated the type of mechanism of injury that occurred to Mr. Cabrera, who is 64 years old at the time of this incident, where this pallet jack strikes the pallets, causing him to fall forward, face plant on the pallet, and then struck again, and fall again to the ground. It does take a couple weeks for the next symptoms to come about, but that is certainly not inconsistent with how he is describing what happened to him on this date. And their argument is mainly that he was nudged, and that's just not consistent with the majority of the evidence. And the evidence supports the commission's finding that that is how the accident occurred, as described by Mr. Cabrera. When appellant's counsel questioned Dr. Stanley about the mechanism of injury, Dr. Stanley was asked if, question, if you learn Mr. Cabrera is reporting he was struck by a loaded stand-up pallet jack traveling an estimated 20 miles per hour, thrown chest first into pallets, and then twisted onto his side, would this more detailed mechanism of injury change your opinion in any way? Dr. Stanley said, no, I was aware of that more detailed history based on the records from Tyler Medical Services. Now, certainly, Mr. Cabrera doesn't know the speed of the pallet jack. Nobody would know that, and I don't think he would know that. But that was something that he indicated, trying to give a picture of this pallet jack and how quickly it struck these pallets. Appellant's counsel also asked Dr. Alpert, the other Section 12 examiner, what did Mr. Cabrera tell you concerning his relevant history? Dr. Alpert said he states on October 14, 2019, he was in a factory and a person with a pallet jack hit him. He fell on top of the pallet pile. He fell onto his right side, and the right side of his neck hit the pallet. His right arm was behind his back, and his chest hit the floor. I submit to this court that this accident, as described by Mr. Cabrera, is sufficiently descriptive in terms of how he fell on the date of the accident. Was he aware that the pallet jack was going 20 miles an hour? No, of course not. Was he aware that this happened in a very quick and swift manner? Yes, of course. He was standing, and the next moment he's face planted on the pallets. I would submit that the commission could reasonably find that his description was an accident that arose out of and in the course of his employment. As I said, I think the crux of the case is there sufficient medical evidence to support the commission's finding of a causal connection between his injuries and this accident? Dr. Ross, the treating neurosurgeon, board certified, indicated in his deposition that his opinion is that there is a causal connection between Mr. Cabrera's neck condition and this work accident. Yes, he originally thought there might be cervical radiculopathy based upon the radiation of numbness. Then he did an EMG, found out that that was negative, but he continued to find during future MRIs that Mr. Cabrera's cervical spinal stenosis and myelopathy was getting worse as a result of this condition in his neck. Mr. Cabrera was asymptomatic prior to this accident. He had no other accidents or injuries. And it was only after this accident, within a 2-week period, that he began to complain of neck pain and radiation down into his arms. Dr. Ross testified that it was based on those circumstances that he found that there was a causal connection between his condition and the injury. The fact that particular part of the history regarding the speed of the forklift does not defeat that opinion. He is basing it on the asymptomatic condition of Mr. Cabrera, the trauma he suffered, and the subsequent complaints that came from his cervical condition as well as his shoulder condition. During cross-examination of Dr. Stanley, I asked the following question. Is it fair to say that you agree Mr. Cabrera suffered trauma to the shoulders, just not to the extent of rotator cuff tears. Dr. Stanley said yes. What is described in the Tyler medical records is a left shoulder contusion. I then asked Dr. Stanley, do you also agree Mr. Cabrera suffered a neck injury involving a temporary exacerbation of pre-existing arthritis and stenosis that developed into radicular symptoms and weakness in the upper extremities, but that these conditions had resolved at the time of your examination? Is that correct? Dr. Stanley answered, yes. Actually, I thought they had resolved even prior to my evaluation, because when he saw Dr. Ross, it wasn't clear that he had evidence of cervical radiculopathy. And as the commission noted in their decision, Dr. Ross actually thought Cabrera had cervical radiculopathy at the initial visit. Dr. Stanley also noted in his opinion that he thought Mr. Cabrera was at MMI. He never saw any of the future MRIs. And as this court has said in Dukic, this court may affirm the commission's decision on any basis supported by the record, regardless of the commission's finding or its reasoning. Dr. Stanley never had the benefit of the future MRIs of the cervical spine, which showed further degeneration and myelopathy. Dr. Alpert, by the way, wrote a report, which was Appellate's Exhibit 2 to the deposition of Dr. Alpert. And in that report that was dated October 18, 2021, Dr. Alpert was asked, does Mr. Cabrera exhibit any symptom magnification, malingering, or non-organic pain signs regarding these injuries? Dr. Alpert's answer was, his main complaints are shooting pain down both of his arms with numbness and tingling and neck pain, which are all consistent with cervical radiculopathy or cervical myelopathy, as opposed to a shoulder pathology, in my opinion. And on page 8, he was asked, what is the current status and diagnosis of Mr. Cabrera? Dr. Alpert answered, current diagnosis is right-sided cervical radiculopathy referred to his right shoulder. And finally, he was asked, do you feel additional treatment is medically necessary? Dr. Alpert wrote, I recommend he gets his neck surgery as recommended by Dr. Ross. The commission's reliance on Dr. Ross's well-reasoned and evidence-based opinion is entirely appropriate. The finding of causal connection is supported by the manifest weight of the evidence. Mr. Cabrera sufficiently proved by the medical evidence he is entitled to temporary total disability benefits and medical, including prospective medical care for the surgery recommended by Dr. Ross. May I entertain any questions?
Any questions from the court?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lovato, you may reply.
Sure, Your Honor. First, I want to just kind of reply to a point that counsel made at the beginning, which was that this is really a case of causation rather than accident. And truthfully, I agree. I do understand the nuance that my colleague was going for when he put accident into question, that being what accident really happened. And I think we've explored that a little bit. I would agree with Mr. Castaneda that that probably does go more to the idea of causation than it does to the idea of accident. But even during Mr. Castaneda's argument, he pointed out a few things that go to discredit the idea that this extremely violent 20 mile per hour pallet jack injury caused such symptoms. First of all, we've harbored, and during my argument, we discussed often about what actually did happen. Counsel read into the record just then the testimony. He chalked it up to language disputes, which we explored as well. I don't believe that's a truly valid excuse to why all of a sudden, once the benefits are denied, all of a sudden his injury becomes significantly more traumatic and violent. I think a better explanation would be that he had, and as counsel put in his own, and Dr. Ross says, pre-existing symptoms that all of a sudden are getting worse. And when I say all of a sudden, I don't mean shortly after the injury occurred. I mean about 2 weeks to a month after the injury occurred. He talked about Dr. Alpert giving an opinion as to neck surgery. Dr. Alpert plainly admits he's not a spine surgeon. He was there too, and look at the petitioner's shoulders, which he objectively said no further treatment as to the shoulders. He might have he may have suffered a left shoulder contusion, and that would be it. Dr. Ross does not hold himself out to be a neck surgeon or a spine doctor. I believe if you look at the record, Dr. Ross was saying it's essentially his understanding that when there is radiculopathy, which she's only basing on the petitioner's complaints, but that is a valid reason for a neck surgery and a fusion. Now, if you take that in conjunction with what Dr. Ross, the treating physician, has one testified to and two found objective evidence, there is no radiculopathy. So Dr. Alpert's point is that that's his kind of his general understanding, but it's not applicable in this case, as Dr. Ross has said there is no radiculopathy based on one is his examination of Mr. Cabrera, and two, the EMG that showed there is absolutely no radiculopathy. To recommend surgery, then, based on essentially a non-credible witness's subjective complaints, I think is just wrong. It's not causally connected. Dr. Ross and counsel just now talked about how there was pre-existing stenosis and myelopathy. I'm probably not saying that correctly. But again, the point being that it's pre-existing. Counsel said multiple times during his argument just now, it's a degenerative condition. At no point did he mention this is an acute condition. I don't see how when it's degenerative, complaints don't start until after, well after the injury. The injury is in question and seems to get more violent once the insurance company stopped allowing benefits. I don't see how that could be found to be a true causal connection when, again, even Dr. Ross's main opinion that the surgery is connected because of radiculopathy is directly contradicted by Dr. Ross's own testimony and his own objective findings and the EMG findings. I believe I've addressed everything I want to address here. If you any of your honors has a final question for me, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Any questions from the court or counsel? Okay. Hearing none, thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this morning. It will be taken under advisement and a written disposition shall issue. This time, the clerk will escort you both out of our remote courtroom and we'll proceed on to the next case. Have a happy
Thank you, your
holiday.
honors. You
Thank
too.
you.
Merry Christmas.